welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Good morning, it's Jessica. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. It's a pleasure to be with you. Today I'm having a guest return, and that is Jessica Olson. Jessica and I originally talked about her stay in the NICU and the work that she does now with NICU moms, but today we're going to talk about her first daughter's experience in being diagnosed with autism, and most recently she had an updated diagnosis that we're going to talk about on today's episode. We're going to talk about grappling with that news of the first diagnosis, what the early days look like, how she's progressed, and what this new diagnosis means for her life. Jessica is an incredible mom who has faced every single obstacle with extreme strength, faith, and perseverance, and she is such an inspiring mom. I know you're going to love learning about her autism journey today, so let's get to it with Jessica. All right, I want to welcome back to the show Jessica Olson. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
I haven't had many repeat guests yet, and so you are back, and I'm so excited to have you back.
I know. I feel honored that I get to do this again. It's so much fun. I'm excited.
So fun. And since we had you on in episode 52 last year, when you talked about your NICU experience, it's been so fun because now I feel like we're friends, and I follow you on social media, and it's been really fun to follow along with your journey and feel like, you know, we're friends from that first conversation. Because when you go deep with somebody, you feel like that instant connection, you know? I don't know if you feel like that.
Oh, definitely. It's been so much fun to watch you as well and to see this podcast grow and all the amazing people that you've had the chance to interview. So I've loved it as well.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, it's been super fun. So for people that may not have listened, I do recommend that they go back and listen to episode 52 for a little deeper dive on your background and your family and your motherhood, things like that. But for people that haven't listened yet, just give a little brief intro on who are you, Jessica?
Okay. I am a wife and a mom of four little kids. I have four children. My oldest is Evie, and she's 6.5. And then I have 4.5-year-old twins named William and Nora. And then my baby is Owen, and he's 2. And we live in South Jordan, Utah. We're just a busy, happy little family. I am a stay-at-home mom, but I also have an essential oil business and kind of a little career helping women incorporate holistic health into their homes. And I do a lot with that and love it so much.
And that's grown a lot since we last talked, huh?
Yeah, it has. It was something I was kind of just starting the first time we did a podcast together, and it's been a really big piece of the last year of my life and something that has brought so much joy and happiness to me. So I would say I work from home now. It's grown to the point where I'm kind of juggling both at the same time, which I do love.
That's awesome. And we're going to go a little more into that later, but today we're going to talk about autism, and your first child, Evie, was diagnosed with autism. Tell me about that time leading up to her diagnosis. What kinds of things were you noticing before her diagnosis, and how did you get to that point?
Sure. So Evie kind of showed delays pretty early on when she was a baby. She just wasn't hitting milestones as to be expected. She was either hitting them and they didn't quite look exactly right. For example, I remember she army crawled for the longest time, but wouldn't like push herself up on all fours to crawl on her hands and knees. And she just was really delayed, just falling behind. And then we would notice that she would acquire skills, and then she would lose them. I can remember when she was a baby teaching her itsy bitsy spider and the hand motions and being so excited, and then trying to do it with her again a few weeks later, and it was like we had never learned it before. She couldn't do it anymore.
Wow.
So we started to get worried and wonder what was going on. At that point, I enrolled her in early intervention and started to kind of acknowledge that she needed a little bit more help and support. And we had speech therapists coming over and people coming over to work with her. And it still just seemed to be like there was something else going on, maybe more to the story.
Sure.
So around the time that she was 2.5, she finally went and met with a child psychologist and gotten an autism diagnosis. So at that point, we felt like we had kind of uncovered what was going on with her and why we were seeing all of these delays with her.
Sure. And was there relief that went along with that, or was it, were you upset? What were your initial emotions related to that?
So by the time that she got the autism diagnosis, I would say that it actually was really a big sense of relief. Mm. But that's because internally I had been fighting this battle of wondering for months and months and months. And kind of already going through this process of grieving, you know, when you have this child that's kind of displaying behavior that's different from what you're expecting, what's like the first thing that you do is you start to Google and research. And so I feel like I had already kind of mapped out in my mind that autism is probably what we were dealing with based on what I had learned. But there was still that internal struggle of one minute feeling like, okay, I just need to accept this. She fits all the criteria for an autism diagnosis. I think I have a child on the autism spectrum. And then the next minute feeling like I wanted to deny it and I just wanted things to be different. So I always tell parents, and I believe this with all my heart, the very worst part of a diagnosis is the months before you actually get the diagnosis where you're wondering. Mm. That is where the suffering is. That's where the anxiety and the pain is, because you're just constantly thinking and trying to decide and trying to make sense of what you're seeing. For me, having somebody actually confirm that, yes, this looks like autism was a huge weight off my shoulders, because I could stop wondering about it and just get on with it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely see that from your perspective. But then on the other side, I also see parents that grapple with having their child have a label put on them, right? And I'm sure you've seen that as well. And people be resistant to going through with the assessments because of what they might find out, or being in denial about what they're actually dealing with. But I'm sure after you did get that autism diagnosis and you knew that there were services available and there was a path to go down, even though it was a new path and a new normal and had to be very, very scary, at least there was a road to go down. When you're just struggling with behavioral issues and regression, all those things, I mean, I can't even fathom the difficulty that space must be for parents.
Yeah, people are really afraid of labels. Yeah. And I understand it.
Sure.
I think for some children, it can definitely be a hindrance. It kind of depends on what you're looking at, what the issues are that this child has. For me personally, labels have always been my friend. They've been helpful. They've been doors to open to receive help and support from professionals. Mm-hmm. So that autism label was something that provided relief, because I felt like it gave me the ability to get services for her and support, like you were saying. And I've always felt that way, but I definitely validate and honor that for some parents, the label is a hard thing to swallow.
I get that. Yeah, I do too. I do too. So regardless if there's anybody listening that's either would be find relief from that or still struggles with that, there's grace for everybody. No one's telling you how to think or how to see your kids or what road to go down. But for you, That's amazing. Well, and I think just in this past year, I was just hearing about how they've kind of redefined autism and taken out the word Asperger's. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
From the definition? And so it's more of an umbrella term that puts children on the spectrum without additionally labeling them as Asperger's or, you know, things like that. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that autism encompasses a wide variety of realities and a wide variety of, I don't want to say severity.
Sure.
But it's just, it encompasses a lot.
Right.
Right? And there's that saying, you can meet one child with autism and you've only met one child with autism.
Right.
And I have definitely found that to be true in my experience. I have never, still to this day, met a child where I walk away and say, oh, she is just like Evie. Mm. It doesn't happen. And I think that it's good for us to remember that it is just this umbrella term that's just a term to describe kind of a set of behaviors that are similar but not the same.
Sure.
And that it doesn't dictate what that child is capable. It doesn't dictate or predict the future. I really just think of it as a means to help and support and kind of a way to help understand what's going on. But that's kind of how I think of it.
Right. And using that person first language. So you have a daughter, her name is Evie, and she has autism. She's not an autistic girl named Evie. It's putting her as a person first, and this is part of her story, part of her life, part of her circumstances. Just like we all have attributes about our lives that affect us and how we go about things. I love that. So tell me about Evie. Tell me about what life looks like for Evie.
Oh my goodness. Evie cannot do this without crying, so I'm going to try to keep it together.
It's okay.
I would say that she is one of the happiest souls I've ever met. She is so loving. You know, the people that Evie lets in and that she really knows well, like me and her dad, she just adores us in a way that is very special and unique and not like anything that I've ever felt before in my life from someone. She has a really big heart. She's very affectionate and just really enjoys when she gets attention from the people around her. It just lights Evie up. She sparkles. She loves her family. She loves her grandparents. She loves movies. She's really into Lion King right now. Lion King's probably her favorite. She loves playing outside and swinging. She loves the beach and the ocean. She loves books, looking at books. She just is a joy. And I was talking to my husband about her the other day, and I said to him, you know, it's funny because people say to us all the time, especially when they find out a little bit more about how Evie's story has progressed, which I know we'll talk about. But the natural instinct is to say, I'm so sorry. And I said to my husband, gosh, when people say I'm so sorry, I want to say back to them, if you knew her, you wouldn't be sorry. And he was like, that's exactly how I feel. We feel like she is just the brightest ray of sunshine in our lives. And being around her, although it's difficult and although we have to take care of her and although she needs a lot of assistance and will her entire life, what she gives to us is so much greater just in her disposition. She just sparkles. And I don't really know a way to describe her besides saying that.
Oh, I love that. I would love somebody to describe me as sparkly. I don't think anybody ever has, but that would be the greatest way to be described because I can feel what that would be like to be around her with that adjective, you know, like she's just kind of magnetic in that. I can see that. That's amazing. And so when you were telling people that Evie has autism and people would sometimes go to, oh, I'm so sorry. I think people think that's the right thing to say. Like they're kind of mirroring you like, oh, you just got this really hard diagnosis. You're going down this unknown road. So how do you want people to react? If you're sharing Evie for the first time or telling people for the very first time Evie has autism, what is the right response for you?
Oh, that's a hard question.
I know.
You know, it depends on the day. You know, there are days when you want people to say, I'm so sorry, because you're feeling down in the dumps. And then there are days when you feel like that's not appropriate. I think that what happens, at least for me and for most of the women that I know who are special needs parents in some capacity, is we learn to give people a lot of grace.
Sure.
For the responses that they have. I don't get easily offended by the things that people say. And if you do say to me, I'm so sorry, what I'm hearing is that you're sorry that Evie's life has to be difficult. And I'm sorry that Evie's life has to be difficult too. I wish I could make her life easier for her. And if I could, I would.
Sure.
In a moment. But obviously, I'm not sorry that she's mine. I'm not sorry that she's here. I'm not sorry that she exists. If loving her and being her mom means dealing with her challenges, then that's the path that I want to walk because I want to be her mom. I want to have her in my life. So I understand when people say I'm sorry. I get what they're saying. But I think that the best thing that you can do is just say, tell me about her.
Sure.
Just tell me about your child and just give that parent some room to kind of talk and express themselves. And then to also know that you should never let the fear of saying the wrong thing stop you from having the conversation, because I'm not here to judge or to nitpick what people say, and I don't think most parents are either.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. The other week at church, I'm new in the area, and so I'm still meeting a lot of people, and there was a little boy in nursery with my son who had leg braces, and his dad is constantly holding him and kind of being his voice and things, and so I didn't know the circumstances. So when I had the chance, I went up to the mom, and I said, "Oh, our sons are in nursery together. Tell me about your son." And at first, she seemed kind of caught off guard, and it made me wonder, is that because she didn't want to share, or is that because she doesn't get asked very much about her child because people aren't really sure what to say or if they should say something? And so that really got me thinking about that. And so I just said, "Tell me about your son. What does he like to do? What are his favorite things? Does he like to play outside? Does he like Thomas the Train like my son does, you know?" And so we just got talking about her son as a person, and she seemed so happy to share about not just what's wrong with him, but who is he as a person and what is he like? And I really tried to emphasize, you know, who is he as a little boy, not just what is he in terms of his diagnosis.
Yeah, and when you don't ask, what does it subconsciously say? Mm-hmm. It subconsciously says that maybe this is something shameful that we don't talk about.
Sure.
And I don't think that that's what people mean for it to be. Because when I say that out loud, obviously everyone's like, "Oh, that's awful. No, that's not at all how we would describe this situation." But we need to bring these things out into the open and mm-hmm. out into the light so that Evie feels like people understand her and understand how to relate and talk to her and be around her. And so that people can really love and enjoy our family to the fullest capacity, they have to know our story. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I think you did the right thing. I think we just say, "Tell me about your family. Tell me about your child." And they'll tell you those things that you need to know.
Right, sure.
And help to navigate that conversation.
Sure, sure. And so a typical characteristic of autism for a lot of children is social anxiety and, you know, kind of that disconnect. What was your perspective early on with, is Evie going to have friends? Is she going to get invited places? That had to enter your mind. Like, I just want her to be seen and have friends and things like that. What was that like for you?
You know, I kind of had to make peace from a pretty early age that Evie is not going to have friends in the typical way that most children do. And I had to grieve that loss. That's a real and tangible loss that hurts. And I think I've come to a place where I've made peace with it. She has her siblings and she has her family and she has her cousins. But she's not able to communicate in a way that makes it easy for her to make friends. Mm-hmm. She has friends at school that understand her and that go to school with her each day and that have their own struggles. And they strike up little relationships with one another. But her life is always going to look differently in that way. And I think that I just have to make peace with that and to focus on the fact that Evie is happy. And that I don't think she feels like she's lacking in that area. I sure. think that she's surrounded by enough people who love and enjoy and appreciate her that if she's not getting invited to play dates, I think she's okay. And we're okay with that too. But definitely that's something that we had to let go of. I mean, really, I can remember when I was dealing with this new autism diagnosis, and I had to do it all over again when we got her updated diagnosis recently. But you kind of have to mourn the loss of the life that you were expecting. Mm. And that means letting go of a lot of ideas of typical things that you imagined your child might do that maybe that's not on the horizon for them anymore. But what starts to happen when you kind of piece this back together and re-envision a life for your child is things that you used to think were really important don't feel that important anymore. So it doesn't matter that much to me if she gets invited to a play date because we're dealing with so much more than that and bigger things than that. And I just see now that we can cultivate happiness and joy right where we are in our circumstances without having to push her to step outside of where she's comfortable or to push ourselves too much. Like, we can let some of those things just go.
Oh my gosh, that is huge, Jessica. That is a huge place, and I can't even fathom the peace that comes from really stepping into that belief and that reality for you. And I definitely think too, sometimes the things that we grieve over, the loss of something or the loss of the future or whatever it is, so many times it's our own expectations and our own desires and our own wishes. It's not even, like you said, she doesn't even realize if she gets invited to the play date or not. It's more about us, right? And we're the adults. Like, we need to suck it up a little bit sometimes and realize, okay, bigger picture, not a big deal. It's okay.
Yeah.
But still, you're allowed to have that grieving time to be like, okay, I need to release that because ultimately that's going to hold me back if I really just get bogged down with all of those little losses, right? Is that kind of how it is?
Yeah, definitely. What Evie has done for me the most is she has taught me to be present and to not think about what if or I wish or what will be. She's taught me to be present and to focus on today and to look for beauty in today. Mm. So I used to, and that's not to say that that was something that I always have been able to do. We're talking about years and years of struggle and turmoil and pain to get to a place where I don't think about the things that she's lacking or missing out on anymore.
Sure.
It was a process to get there. But that's the gift that she's given me that's been the most profound in my life, is that I just am present now. I just want to focus on today. What do we have going for us today, and how can we find beauty in today? Because there's never going to be beauty or joy or peace found in thinking that you're missing out or wishing that you were living a life that's different than the reality that you're living. I wish I hadn't wasted so much of my time wanting to change things, because I was missing out on the beauty of reality and the beauty of where I am right now. So yeah, I don't think about that stuff really anymore. I just don't.
That's amazing. And I love how something that was so specific just to Evie's circumstances and Evie's life has really translated to opening up the rest of your life in terms of that perspective. That is amazing. What a gift.
Yeah, totally a gift.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so since we last spoke, we have mentioned it a couple times so far, so let's just go ahead and move along in that journey. You just had an updated diagnosis, and this is something that I've never even heard about before, so I'm really interested to hear more about it. Tell me about why her diagnosis was updated and what it is and what that means.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about it, because I almost don't identify as much with the autism label anymore, and I'll kind of explain why.
Okay.
So at the beginning of August of this past year, 2016, she started to develop some new symptoms that were worrisome for us. She started to have some difficulty breathing. We noticed that she was hyperventilating a lot, or if she wasn't hyperventilating, then she would be holding her breath. And we started to get worried about it and pay attention to it. We didn't know what was going on. Things progressed to the point where her school was involved and they were concerned. And there came a day where the nurse at her school was monitoring her oxygen levels. And she gave me a call and said, listen, Evie needs to go in and go to the emergency room. Her oxygen levels just are not looking good. So we took her in. We're kind of expecting to just be there for a few hours and to run a few tests. And we ended up being there for the rest of the week, maybe 3 or 4 days, running all sorts of tests and talking to every doctor and specialist, trying to figure out what was going on with her. That led to some genetic testing that we conducted at the hospital, and then we were sent home. And we knew that with this genetic testing that we were kind of looking to see, there were a few different syndromes that were a possibility for her that would explain the breathing difficulty that she was having. And one of those syndromes was something called Rett syndrome. Now, I knew what Rett syndrome was. I had read about it 4 years prior when Evie got diagnosed with autism, and I was really terrified that it might be Rett syndrome. So we had to wait I think, 6 weeks for those genetic tests to come back. And then I was sitting in my bedroom one morning and my phone rang and I picked it up and it was the neurologist at the hospital we were at. And he said, "I'm so sorry to tell you, but your daughter has Rett syndrome." And it was just like, I just fell to the floor. I couldn't stand. Rett syndrome is a neurological syndrome that really severely affects every part of your body and your ability to function. It affects your ability to walk, your ability to use your hands, your ability to talk, and even your ability to breathe. So that's kind of why we were seeing some of the breathing symptoms. That was a representation or a manifestation of Rett syndrome kind of starting to cause some issues with her. So it's much more physically debilitating in nature than autism is. And it's actually very common for children to initially be diagnosed with autism. When they're younger, it can often look more like autism. As they get older, it kind of starts to look different. And that's what we're starting to see now is this is going to affect Evie a lot more physically than we were ever expecting. And some of the characteristics that she's always had that are more typical of classic autism will likely fade to the background and not be the forefront of the things that really hinder her ability to live a full life. So we're worried now more about things like keeping her walking, keeping her using her hands in a way that's functional, and then staying on top of the language that she does have right now. So the same way that autism is a spectrum that affects all girls differently, and it does only affect girls, because if a boy is born with Rett syndrome, typically he's just not able to survive
really?
Much past birth.
Wow.
So we have to focus more on her physical abilities now. And it's just going to be a much more intense journey than we were expecting in terms of the care that she's going to need lifelong.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah, it's heavy. I mean, I was very, very afraid of it being Rett syndrome. I can remember telling my friends during this process that we were waiting, I would say to them, "You guys, I just need you to hope that it's anything besides this one thing." Because Rett is just, it just robs them of so much. You know, it can take away all of the abilities that she has over time. With that said, it's spectrum, and I have no idea what to expect. I don't know. I can tell you that today, Evie has Rett syndrome, and she can still walk for the most part. There are days when things like going up and down the stairs are really hard for her. We had a day a few months ago where she did not have the ability or the strength in her legs to go from sitting to standing. She couldn't stand up, and that was a really, really tough day. But she bounced back and kind of regained some strength. She has days where she can feed herself like a pro and days where I feel like I'm dealing with a 7-month-old baby because she makes a huge mess with her spoon and I can tell that her hand function just isn't up to par that day. And I just don't know how things will unfold. I know so many little girls with Rett now, and they're all so vastly different. It's really common for them to perhaps like be in a wheelchair before the age of 2, and maybe they never ever learned how to walk or speak or use their hands. And then there are some girls who will continue to walk through the majority of their life. You just don't know how this is going to unfold, but I know that Rett really changes the landscape of what we're dealing with. It's a much different reality than just the autism diagnosis was.
Wow. She is so lucky to have you, Jessica. When you hear that somebody that you really care about, like I care so genuinely about you and your family. When you hear somebody is going to be going through something so challenging and so uncertain and unknown, and there's just going to be so much in your future. What you've expressed as far as the growth you've seen in yourself since autism diagnosis to now is so profoundly remarkable and amazing and beautiful. I don't know. I just feel like She is the luckiest little girl to have a mom that is so equipped with the perspective that you have and the strength that you have. And you may not even feel that strength all the time. I'm not saying that at all, but it's in you. And what you've expressed so far, as far as her life's journey and getting her to where she is now, you're only going to keep going and becoming more equipped and strong and amazing as you grapple with each new stage, Jessica. You really are.
Thank you.
You really are.
That's so kind of you. It's a hard reality.
It is.
It's not, and I get that. Like when I tell people sometimes the reality of what Rett syndrome means, oftentimes it's like they just start to cry their eyes out because it's so sad. And I totally get that, and I feel that so much as well. But what I'm trying to give Evie is the perspective of a mother who finds beauty and joy in her life. And I can't change it. If I could, I would. I would make it different. But I feel like it's my responsibility to model for her how to find joy and beauty in her reality. Because that's what I want for her. I want her to look for the sun and to look for the light and to see goodness in what the gifts that she's been given, and to know that her life can still be good and meaningful and beautiful. And I really believe that.
Well, and I think you're showing all of us that. You're not only a role model for Evie, but now you're a voice for other mothers and other women who are going through maybe not Rett syndrome, but their own personal challenge, right? And that no matter what the future may hold for you, we don't even know, for most of us, know what's right around the corner for us. But inevitably, there's going to be amazing, beautiful things, and there's going to be hard things. But there's still the beauty around, even amidst those hard things. And I think that is such an amazing takeaway. And the reason I wanted to have you back on is because people need to hear stories like this, where it's like getting the worst news that you were praying and hoping that you wouldn't hear that name on the other side of the phone. That came. But that didn't mean that it was going to knock you down forever. It wasn't going to knock her down forever. This is just your new path, right?
Yeah, I can remember. I don't know if you remember this, but on your Instagram one day, you had posted something about hope. And I realized that what I see as hope now is getting to a place where you realize that it actually doesn't matter what happens if you can cultivate joy regardless and no matter where you are. So I just don't feel that closely tied to my circumstances or to the outcome of this anymore, the way that I used to, because it doesn't really matter what happens as long as I've learned how to be happy, right? And if I can teach Evie how to be happy, then it also doesn't really matter what happens with Evie, because we're not worried about happiness meaning she never winds up in a wheelchair, or happiness meaning she never has a feeding tube. If we disattach from happiness needing to look one certain way, and just focus on how can we learn to just find joy in today and where we are, then to me that's hope. And that's been the biggest lesson that she has taught me. It's been just life-changing, really.
Oh, absolutely. And you're so young. So to think that you have all these years and this, abounding life left to live with this perspective, like that's got to be incredibly empowering.
I've never really thought of it that way, but what it does for me is it takes away the fear. It just takes away the fear, because I believe that the only thing I can control now is my perspective and my ability to create joy and beauty where I am, and that's it. I have to let go of the other things because I can't control this. I wish I could take away Rett syndrome. I can't. I wish I could know for sure what her life is going to look like. I don't have a clue. So all I can do is control myself and control my thoughts and try to make the best of where I am. So I used to really be scared of the future and have a lot of anxiety, especially when she was first diagnosed. I was so afraid of what might come, and I just don't think about it anymore because I believe in my ability to create happiness no matter what. I feel like I'm learning how to do that now, and that gives me a lot of power, like you were saying.
Yeah. Wow, you're amazing. Well, and in the midst of all of this, you have really relied on essential oils and that aspect of your life. Have you always been interested in that type of holistic type healing? And what role has that played in helping Evie with her challenges?
Yeah, I've always been interested in it. I started kind of trying to figure out what we could do naturally and holistically for her from day one, from the moment I started to see problems and developmental delays with her. So I've been a long time advocate of natural solutions and essential oils, and just recently decided to start building a business off of educating and supporting other women who would like to find a way to support their own children with some of these tools. And for me, it's just, it's been so empowering, because when you have a child who's very young, who has some significant struggles, you feel like your options are to do nothing or to do everything, you know, to put them on medication that maybe you're not comfortable with, or things that are usually not recommended for children who are older. I needed to find some sort of middle ground to feel like I wasn't helpless, like I had tools and options that were natural and safe. I needed that support. So for me, it's been a huge integral part of my ability to cope with some of the realities of raising this child. You know, to have those moments where Evie's having a meltdown or a panic attack or a really rough day, and to know that I have some oils that work for her, that I can take a few moments to sit down with her and rub some on her chest and rub some on her back and cut my hands over her mouth so she can take some deep breaths, and it just calms both of us down. It's been a real gift for me and helped me to kind of cope and deal with the reality of everyday stress. So for a long time, I used them and didn't say anything about it. It just was something that I used as a tool in my own home. And then eventually I got to the point where I was like, I would love to help other moms just kind of share what's working for us and what is the most impactful. And it's kind of just grown from there. But I've loved every minute of it.
Well, and you're going to be such an amazing resource to other parents that are looking for more natural options and everything, because I'm sure it's hard sometimes to find information, especially when you're in a specific niche like you are with children with special needs. What an amazing, you know, person you would be to stumble upon and be like, oh my gosh, this is working for her, for them. Maybe it could work for us too. I'm sure people come across you all the time and have that reaction.
Yeah, definitely. And I also, I've just cultivated such deep relationships with these women through working with them and educating them and helping them come up with blends and protocols that work for their families. There's a lot more going on emotionally. Sometimes I'm the first person that they've been able to talk to, or the first person that they've found that they can kind of see a piece of themselves in. I've had moms reach out to me and say, you know, I haven't even spoken these words out loud before, but I'm pretty sure my child is on the autism spectrum and I need help. And it's such an honor to have anybody turn to me in that capacity. And I'm just so grateful to be able to touch their life in any form. And to be able to help in any form means the world to me. And I am also sharing tools that I can't live without, that have made such a big difference for our family. And I'm glad that I've gotten to a place where I feel comfortable sharing that and giving that to other people, because it's just been really impactful for us. And I can't imagine not having the support of some middle of the ground, like middle way solutions with Evie. It would just be too overwhelming.
Absolutely. Okay, so for people that are wondering, oh my gosh, well, how do I contact her? Or what can I do? Just lay it all out there. Where can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more specifically about your the oils, especially for use on their special needs, children with special needs?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at One Holistic Home, or you can email me, jess@oneholistichome.com.
Okay, that's so perfect. And I'm going to link to everything in the show notes at extraordinarymomspodcast.com. So if somebody's multitasking right now and doesn't have a pen, they can just go to the podcast website and they can hook up with you, because, gosh, you're so helpful and you're such a wealth of knowledge. And I love it when people are just sharing something firsthand, something that's made such a difference in their life, and they just want to share it. You know, they want to share the goodness. So that's amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
That's so good. Well, I asked this question on the podcast last year. It's always my final question. I ask, what would you tell your pre-motherhood self? And a year later, I'm curious to know now, is it any different? What would you tell your pre-motherhood self, Jessica?
I've been thinking about this. I think what I would tell my pre-motherhood self now is just not to be afraid. To not fear a life that's different than what you're expecting. I think just because we're so used to having this plan, and my life has unfolded very differently and continues to surprise me. So I would just want her to know that that's definitely where the pain is and the heartache is, but for me, that's also been where all of the beauty is, too. And that if she can get really good at learning to find the beauty, she has nothing to be afraid of. And I'd probably just tell her that I believe in her, too.
Love it. Jessica, you are truly extraordinary. And wow. What a gift to be able to see back, you know, from the time of your autism diagnosis in the very beginning to now, and to realize what a different person you are, what a different mom you are in such a positive way. There's got to be a lot of pride in that.
Oh, I attribute it to Evie, and I attribute it to my family, to my husband. I attribute it to, like, all of the people who have picked me up and carried me through this and help me to get through it when I felt like I couldn't do it. A lot of personal growth has come as a result of it, and I'm grateful for that, but I really attribute it to Evie. Oh. She's the person who deserves the credit for changing my life and opening my eyes and bringing so much beauty into my life. So it's really not about me, it's about her.
Way to go, Evie. Way to go, Evie. Wow, that's amazing. You're amazing. I could say that 1,000 times, but I mean that sincerely. And I know the listeners are going to be so inspired by your journey that regardless of where they're at today, no matter what circumstances they woke up to, there's happiness, joy, and hope to be found.
Yes, absolutely.
And now the lawnmower's right outside my window. So that'll wrap it up for today. Thanks, Jessica, for sharing. This has been such a meaningful conversation to me. Thank you so much for sharing so, so vulnerably. You're extraordinary.
No, thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
It was such a joy to get to talk with Jessica again, especially with her updated circumstances and this new diagnosis of Rett syndrome. I had no idea about that syndrome, and hearing her express so beautifully how she was able to process that information and how she's able to go forth with a lot of uncertainty, but yet a lot of hope and a lot of joy, it just gives me chills even thinking about it. And we're all capable of having that outlook regardless of our circumstances if we choose it. So if you want to see pictures of Jessica's family, anything that we talked about on the show, any of the links to how to contact her, how to follow her on Instagram, you can go to extraordinarymomspodcast.com. That's where you can also listen to past episodes. If you're new to this community, you can listen right there. Or if you're listening on iTunes, obviously you've already found us. Hey, If you're a new subscriber, you need to download past episodes. The new ones won't be automatically loaded onto your phone. But if you click subscribe, then anytime a new episode comes out, it will be downloaded automatically. And so then you won't use any data for streaming this episode. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3, on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. And I just love everybody that leaves ratings and reviews. It helps people to find the show. There are new podcasts, literally like hundreds and hundreds of podcasts coming out every single day. And so it's super hard to stay in the top rankings. And not that I just do it for selfish reasons, but if we're ranked, it helps people to know that the show exists. Otherwise, it's super hard to find it. And I love getting emails every day from people saying, I am so glad that I found this podcast. So-and-so's story really inspired me, or I feel so encouraged and more joyful in my motherhood role because of these other mom stories that I've been hearing. I love it. That's why I do it. And it's been such a pleasure to bring you all of these past episodes. And I look forward to a summer full of amazing interviews as well. So thanks for joining us today. And I'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.